they said, oh, would you go to LA? We were having a screening of The Holy Grail. There's going to be a big screening at the Directors Guild. And I tossed up, you know, would more people laugh at me playing football or on screen? So I thought, well, I better do my bit. And I went with Gilliam to LA, and there was a big screening at the Directors Guild, and I was watching it at the back, and it went really well. And then there was a tap on my shoulder. I turned around, and it was George Harrison. He said, I've been looking for you. He said, no, we can't talk here. Let's go up to the projection room and smoke a reefer. I thought, okay. And so up we went, and then they threw us out, and we went for dinner. And then was Olivia, there was a picture of us that night, Olivia and Terry Gilliam, and they were tired. And George said, do you want to come back to hear some of my music? I'm recording. I said, yeah, sure, lovely. So we went to A&M, and he played me some of Extra Texture. And then we went to back to the hotel, and we played guitar, and we just talked all night. And it was like, poof, we just bonded.
Yeah. What did you talk about?
I think we talked about what it was like being in a group, because I think we had similar roles in our group. So there were two big blocks. You had Lennon and McCartney, and we had John and Graham wrote together, and Mike and Terry wrote together. So I was also, you know, in the middle of it. And it's a sort of strange role, because you're being outvoted by more powerful people. So that was interesting, and we talked about everything, really. But once when we were filming Brian, he came to the set and he said, how's it going? I said, well, it's okay. It's not easy to get on camera, you know, with John and Mike. He said, imagine how hard it was getting into the studio with John and Paul. So I said, fair enough. Yeah. Say no more. That's it. You got it.
And he, of course, funded completely?
And completely funded. He mortgaged his house and his business to raise the cash and put it all on the life of Brian.
Amazing.
Insane.
Because your backers had pulled out at the last minute.
Lou Grade had read the script, unfortunately. Some of younger people at EMI had bought it and loved it. And Lou Grade finally read it and said, no, we kind of have nothing to do with this. And we started building sets in Tunisia on our own money. So we had to sue him. But worse, we had to go and find the money, and it was really impossible. I went to New York with John Goldstone, the producer, and, you know, it was like selling Springtime for Hitler.
Yeah.
They did not want to know. And then we went to L.A., and they were even more didn't want to know. And then finally George Colum said, I've got the money. I've got it. You're on. You know, so it was extraordinary.
With no strings attached or?
No.
Right.
And I said, why did you do that? He said, I wanted to see the movie. So, you know, I mean, it's fairly incredible.
Yeah.
When you think about it. He mortgaged all of Friar Park, everything he had.
Friar Park was his house.
House in Henley.
Right.
You know, if you can imagine, you go to the wife and say, what did you do today? Oh, I put all our money on a Python film about Christ, you know. Oh, good luck. Thanks a lot.
Was that Olivia he was with?
Olivia, yeah.
And how did she feel about it?
I don't know. I've got to ask her.
Because, yeah, that would have been a weird conversation.
Really? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because it was an extraordinary thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, $4.5 million in those days is still a lot of money, you know, a huge amount of money.
I mean, he probably had a lot, right?
No. Point. I mean, I think that was it.
Oh, okay.
You know, if you mortgage your house and your business.
Right.
To raise capital, I mean, you've got nothing in the bank. That is your bank. But I think they might have been doing a Bialystok and Bloom. I think they might have been doing the producer. I think it might have been a tax thing.
Okay.
Because when it started to make money, they had to change it round a bit. You know, put it overseas in Rotterdam.
Yeah. And they set up handmade films.
Handmade films to make it.
Yeah, okay. Which ended up being kind of a brilliant outfit. They made some great
films.
They
made some very good films. Gilliam's second one, I think it was Time Bandits, was a very good film. They made With Nail.
They made With Nail.
They bought With Nail.
I mean, that is...
And then I did the last one, Nuns on the Run, with Robbie.
Right, okay. They did a private function as well.
Yes.
And... they did Privates on Parade, Scrubbers. That was a good one. Bullshot.
That's some funny. Billy Connolly sang the song in that.
And The Missionary, of course, as well.
Right.
And Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa was a good film.
Yeah. Private Function. Did you ever write music with George?
Yes, it's in my show. The one thing we ever wrote together is in my show. It's from Rutland Weekend Television.
Uh-huh.
And it's a brilliant joke. I won't spoil it. It's a visual joke. But people haven't seen it. Many people, most people haven't seen it, so it's a big shock to them.
Yeah.
and it's a nice surprise. But we wrote it together, and it's in his book of lyrics, Idle Harrison. I like that.
Very good. And one of the things that defined his life was a spiritual search.
Yes.
That he was on.
Yes.
Did you get caught up in the spiritual quest along with George?
The only thing we ever disagreed with was religion.
Okay.
And we, you know, we talked, and I mean, even on his deathbed, he said to me, I'm okay, because I'm not going to have to go through rebirth. I said, oh, I'll give anything to be reborn. You know, we were funny about it. It wasn't a problem, because we were friends. We could talk about anything. And but I'm not religious. I like science.
Yeah.
I think religion is an early attempt to describe the universe. You know, and you wonder what God was doing for the first 5.5 billion years of life on this planet. You know, where was he? What was he doing?
But there's a strand of philosophy, like an interest in philosophy that runs through a lot of the Python stuff and in your songs as well, that to me that seems kind of inspired by some of the same yearning and the same questions about what's it all about. And
I mean, George was a Catholic.
Yeah.
And he became a Hindu. So it's quite interesting. I mean, it's one belief for another belief. But, I mean, it made him, if you see that film of them all in India, suddenly they're all happy again together. It's really sweet. Because I think John goes there and he's strung out and they're all kind of grumpy and mean. And then suddenly they're all kind of, you know, playing and it was sunsets and they're happy. It's very sweet. And I think that was a very powerful impression on them. And it kept them together for a little while, I think. And but George was always really generous and kind. Anybody came in, the waiter, anything, he was always the same to everybody, open and kind. You know, if he could help people or fund them, or that's what he did.
Do you think he changed your own perspective on things?
Yes, absolutely. Not in necessarily in a religious way, but in being kind and, you know, sharing and being, you know, funnier. And I mean, I was going through a divorce, so he cheered me up by telling me I was going to die. You know, so it's quite good, you know. But he also put things in perspective. He said, you know, you can have all the money in the world, you can be the most famous people in the world, but you're still going to have to die. And that's a very good philosophy to have. It's a good reminder that every day can be your last. And I think I use that quite often in comedy. So, you know, just remind people, this, you're alive this minute. This is it. And, you know, you're kind of lucky to be in such a nice place, usually.
Mm.
But, you know, he could be quite a naughty boy, too. We had a lot of fun. And we had a lot of gigs, and people played and stayed and, you know, listened to music and tracks he was trying to deal with. Did you like this one? Did you like that one? All that.
Yeah, because in some ways it looked as though he was just seeking for strategies to prepare for death in some ways.
Absolutely. No question. That's what particularly they learned. He learned from that it was going to be all over.
Mm.
And what does that mean? And how does that affect you? And what do you believe? And that particular religion is rebirth and all of that.
And so to what extent did that all help him cope with the terrible attack that he suffered? How old was he when he was attacked? It was 1999, wasn't it?
Just after the millennium,
okay.
Around the millennium. And I called him up and I said, do you want me to come? And he said, where are you? So we went there, Tanya and I. And he was very disturbed. I've never ever seen him more disturbed. It was really shocking because they fought for 20 minutes.
He'd been stabbed about 40 times or something.
Yeah, with a butcher's knife. Right. And bleeding to death.
And this was just sort of a crazed intruder.
Crazed guy off his meds.
Yeah.
And I think he'd been looking for Paul, but he couldn't find Paul, so it's easier to find Henley. And he came over the wall, smashed in the window. And George, I think, came out, because George was the bold one who told the Hell's Angels to fuck off. He was always the one who came and said, no, you've got to fuck off out of here now, out of Abbey Road. But I think he did the same thing. I think he went at the top of the stage and told him to fuck off, you know. And then he went, yelled Hare Krishna, and the guy came at him up the stairs with a knife. It would have been wiser, perhaps, to lock the door and call the police, you know. So I think Liver called the police, but it took him about 20 minutes to get there. And this all-out attack took place. And I think Liv, in the end, bashed him over the head with a Tiffany lamp. And they all passed out when the police arrived, and blood everywhere. it was like a scene from a horror film. Mm. It was just, his son comes through the door, and they had mom, mother-in-law, and it was just really horrendous. And afterwards, yeah, I know he was very shaken. They had a puja. We went round and went through the attack bit by bit up the stairs. There was still blood on the walls and things. It was like really awful and shocking.
As a kind of therapeutic exercise.
Yes, it's a religious thing. It was a ceremony. You went through and relived all this horrible experience. And we went through it with them. And it was just really horrendous. Really horrendous.
Yeah.
And I think he was still very disturbed. And I think at the end of that year, he started getting cancer. It was beginning to kill him. Because I think he died in 2001.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that had an effect because, he's being stabbed so badly with a butcher's knife.
2001 he died. Yeah, November 2001.
2001 he died, right? And then there
was 58.
The concerts in 2002. Yeah. Yeah.
That's so shocking, isn't it?
They're really horrible.
That must have shaken you as well to see that happen.
Well, I didn't realise how sick he was. I was on the phone to him in Switzerland. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm writing the liner notes for my last album. And if I don't finish them, then you will. What do you mean if you don't finish them? That's when I really realised it was very serious. He was in Switzerland undergoing some kind of... So finally I went back to LA and I then went to see him in the house. And it was clear he wasn't going to live very long. So we hung out, and there was a lovely drummer. Keltner was there. Various people were there, came through. But it was just deeply shocking. I mean, that he was going to die, and he died. And then I think a year later we did that concert, mm-hmm. which was also very moving at the Albert Hall. It's really, really moving.
Yeah.
People like Jeff Lynne and... friends, and they all came and played, and Paul played, and it was lovely. It was very moving. And at the end, the most moving thing of all is Joe Brown playing the ukulele.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see you in my dreams. I'll see you in my dreams, and then all the roses fell from the ceiling because that was the end of a Billy Cotton Band show. They play that every week. I'll see you in my dreams. Mm-hmm. It was one of his favourite songs.
Though the days are long. Twilight sings a song of the happiness that used to be. Soon my eyes will close, soon I'll find repose, and in dreams you're always near to me.